My name is Gloria Lariva. I'm from San Francisco. I'm the president of the typographical sector of the Northern California Media Workers Union of the CWA.
Okay, fantastic. Let's talk about your union involvement, first of all, just a little bit. How big a group of people do you represent, and what kind of work do they do?
Well, our union represents the newspaper workers in the editorial, the office, and the typographical and pre-press areas. And I'm the head of the typographical sector. We cover 15 shops in the Bay Area, including the San Francisco Chronicle and the San Jose Mercury News and a number of other newspapers.
Okay, a couple of very well-known newspapers there. You also have some expertise in and some knowledge about the Venezuelan labor movement. Can you say how you come to that knowledge?
Well, I have been involved for quite a number of years on Latin American issues for workers, from going to Mexico and covering many of the struggles there and labor issues, to being involved in supporting undocumented workers in California and helping organize them into the Longshoremen Warehouse Workers Union. And also, I was invited to take part in a conference last year in July in Venezuela, in which a new labor formation called the Fuerza Bolivariana de Trabajadores, meaning the Bolivarian workers' movement, really. And it's a movement that's not attempting to become a new labor federation, but a movement that was initiated by the Hugo Chavez government to try to democratize and bring in more of the workers into the labor movement, the official labor movement. There are four labor federations in Venezuela. The AFL-CIO is the one that we have. But in Venezuela, the largest one by far is the CTV. The CTV stands for Venezuelan Workers' Confederation. And it's been, it covers some of the larger industrial unions, including the oil workers. As you know, the largest source of income and the largest industry in Venezuela is oil. And unfortunately, over many decades, the Labor Federation has become extremely corrupt, and not just corrupt among leaders, but the leadership has very much been a part of a collaboration with the oil industry, the oil executives, and international oil firms like the U.S. oil companies, that although Venezuela's oil industry is nationalized, it's a state-owned industry and has been for a long time, it still is very much under the control and domination of foreign companies. So many times the oil workers' union leadership and the CTV leadership have done things that have not been in the best interest of not only union workers, but the workers in general of the population.
Okay. And actually, that's a good place to break in here. So, because Venezuela is a very rich country in some ways, but it's a very poor country in other ways. And what Hugo Chavez inherited, and we should talk about who Hugo Chavez is, but he inherited a country that was very polarized and it had a lot of wealth going to a few people and a large number of impoverished people.
Yes. Venezuela has one of the largest resources of oil in the world, certainly one of the highest outside of the Middle East, and is the third largest supplier of oil to the United States, but as well to many other countries. And despite having so much oil and potential income for the country, 80% of the population lives in poverty. And by poverty, we don't mean people who have just trouble getting by with a few bills, people who are really poor. And this is a result of tremendous indebtedness, as is true throughout Latin America, indebtedness to international banks that provided some money at very high interest rates to develop a technology, oil technology, in other parts of the country. So the country is indebted deeply, and therefore much of the wealth is owned by somebody else.
Okay.
So the policies of the old governments have led to this. Hugo Chavez was a young military official in 1992 when he tried a military attack on the government to try to really overthrow the government and install something that would represent more of the interests of the people. He failed in that coup, and he was arrested, put on trial, and imprisoned. But because of that act, He became a real hero to the people, to the vast majority of the Venezuelans, because they saw him as someone who was fighting corruption, fighting the old presidents who had led the country into such poverty. Therefore, when he ran for president in 1990, he won by a tremendous landslide. And he still retains much of that popularity, although he only holds office. He doesn't really hold power. Having been elected to presidency, the same old order exists of the control of the oil industry by the foreign companies and so on. And now you have a situation where the people are actually poorer, but they still look up to Chavez because in the 2 years he's been president, he has brought in a lot of reform. A land reform has been passed in order to take away a lot of the land that belongs to the richest and foreign companies and so on, agribusiness, and to distribute it to the poor. There has been an overhaul of the legislature that the old Congress was thrown out, which, you know, they're like many of our senators who represent lobbyists and big firms, and a new National Assembly was brought in which there's now all these commissions that represent the workers, social services, and so on. And there is also a big move to democratize the labor movement. The labor movement of Venezuela is only representing about 15% of all the workers of Venezuela, much like our situation. Therefore, most workers are not in unions. But what has been unique in Venezuela with the FBT, the Fuerza Bolivariana de Trabajadores, and trying to democratize the CTV, is that in the year 2000, there was a new process begun and a referendum where the whole population was able to vote on the direction that the labor movement would take. In other words, non-union workers would have a say in who the new leaders of the organized labor movement would be. That's something very new. And could, if you could see union leaders who have an interest in protecting their wealth, their own personal kind of fiefdom, they would see that as a huge threat. Because it means they would have to represent people who aren't in unions, people who've been denied the right to unions, people who are so poor they don't even have jobs.
Okay.
And this is a new thing.
Okay. In the United States, when you talk about the AFL-CIO, it is a labor federation that represents, you know, about 15% of the U.S. workforce. You don't consider it as like a major player in the government. It's not there sort of setting policies, especially not today with a strongly conservative president and Congress. Is that different in Venezuela? Is the CTV very influential in the government?
No, I think the CTV could be influential. I mean, I think the workers, especially the oil workers and other industrial workers like the electrical, who've played a big role before in big struggles, they have the potential and the power to have influence. Unfortunately, the leadership has allowed itself to become a captive of the oil industry. And therefore, for example, Hugo Chavez, as you know, about a year and a half ago, met with Fidel Castro of Cuba and had a cooperative trade agreement with Cuba in order to have a huge exchange whereby Cuban doctors would come to Venezuela, help train people to become doctors, and help the health industry, which was really in need of assistance, in return for other economic assistance whereby Venezuela would sell oil to Cuba at a favorable rate. Well, this would, of course, get the United States government angry because they have a blockade against Cuba and they want to strangle that country. But this was seen as solidarity, and a lot of people supported that in Venezuela. They saw the economic improvement through the health care. But the oil workers' leadership denounced it and began to plot with the oil industry and the United States government how to disrupt the oil industry and how to really basically help in overthrowing the Chavez government. Last February, the AFL-CIO hosted a forum for the leadership of the CTV, the Venezuelan Labor Movement, in Washington, D.C. They hosted a forum, and the invitation said, they were bragging about how the CTV leadership and the oil industry had helped to organize a movement to against the Chavez government, basically really to help overthrow it. They didn't say overthrow, but it was very clear what they were saying. And friends of mine that I had met in the Bolivarian labor movement called me from Venezuela and said, you know, can your organizations of the International Action Center that I belong to, can you help us by exposing what's going on in Washington? And a lot of people in Washington that we called organized a picket at the AFL-CIO to say, you're helping to overthrow a democratically elected government of Hugo Chavez. The poor need representation. They're poor because they're rich or rich, you know. And it really upset the whole apple cart.
Okay. Okay, wow. Okay, so this gets back into Cold War politics.
Unfortunately, I think that a lot of the labor union leadership, including even in the higher echelons of the AFL-CIO in the United States, has not had an independent stance defending the workers' interests here vis-a-vis the U.S. government. I think that both Democrats and Republicans have worked together. You know, of course, it's a much more conservative government now with Bush, but even the Democrats have too often supported candidates who speak in favor of labor, but when it comes down to it, they don't do anything for labor. And they keep supporting Democratic presidents who, in turn, I don't recall really much that Clinton did for labor in the United States. In fact, what we saw was that unorganized workers and poor people suffered a great deal by the cuts in welfare, cuts in social programs. Now we see Bush eliminating every worker training program to increase the military budget, part of which is being used to help finance coups. They tried to overthrow Chavez the other day. And so I think this is an important lesson for us, that labor is talking about international solidarity with workers from Venezuela to Mexico to Indonesia, workers who are super exploited. But they're not also taking the other side of the coin in opposing U.S. military intervention and intervention in the affairs of other countries, like Venezuela. I think that the U.S. government very clearly played a role in trying to overthrow Chavez, and the AFL-CIO in February, by hosting an event in Washington to promote the anti-Chavez policies of both the CTV and the oil industry, is helping to support U.S. foreign policy against workers.
Mm-hmm. Now, this the meeting, was that February 2002 or 2001?
No, 2001.
2001, okay.
February.
Okay, so this is after there was a referendum in Venezuela in December 2000, I believe, when people voted, when there was a popular vote to allow different electoral processes for the leadership of the CGT.
Right.
Okay, so it was when, you know, sort of the alarm bells were off for their power.
Right. And then there began to be much more coordination among CIA, the CIA, the media in Venezuela, which is very anti-Chavez,
mm-hmm.
and also with the military, trying to separate the military from Chavez and foment counter-revolution.
Okay. So the things that... Yes?
Then last July, the Fuerza Bolivariana de Trabajadores, this new independent workers' movement, had a conference, and I attended it, in which workers from every union participated to talk about how to pose new candidates against the old CTV leadership.
And are these rank-and-file members, or were these the leadership of the...
A lot of rank-and-file members, but also some union officials.
Okay. And this was last August?
Last July.
Oh, last July. Okay. And what came of that?
Then there were elections in August of 2001. A nationwide referendum to vote for the new leadership, and there was a tremendous amount of fraud that has been denounced by many union leaders of, you know, smaller locals and also just the progressive movement, unorganized workers. And, you know, there was no action taken against it, but people were very disgusted. They felt like, see, it's the same old game, same old shell game with the elections. And many of the ballots were stolen, many of them. It was supposed to be an open process, but the CTV and the Oil Workers Union leadership and those who had an interest in maintaining the old order helped to hide what the real results were. I think the new leader of the CTV, Carlos Ortega, won with 49%, supposedly, of the vote. So people didn't respond to that. But as we can see from the day after Chavez was overthrown, in a coup that was really orchestrated. They call it a strike, but in fact the ones who called for the strike was the Chamber of Commerce. We know what the Chamber of Commerce means.
Right. Now we're talking about last week, right?
Yes.
Okay. So let's bring this up to speed. So there was this effort to reform the labor movement last summer, and that the election failed due to fraud and other things, and so the old leadership kept their grip. Then we went through September 11th. We came through the war on terrorism up until just 1 week ago or so. And at this point, there's been a lot of talk in the press about growing unrest in Venezuela. So why don't you go ahead and take it to the crisis?
Well, it's another step in the move to democratize the country and to bring more of the wealth of the country into the benefit of the people. Hugo Chavez appointed a whole new board of administrators of the oil industry to bring about a new process of where the wealth would be used.
Is that his prerogative as the president, like appointing the National Labor Relations Board or appointing a commission to the United States government? Would it be his prerogative to appoint the board of the National Oil Company?
Yes, it was within his legal power.
Okay.
It was within his legal power to appoint new administrators of the oil industry. Well, this set about a huge rebellion within these executives, because this is not the union. This is the executives of the oil industry, and they, in conjunction with the CTV and the Oil Workers Union in particular, also with undoubtedly the CIA, the U.S. government, and military who were anti-Chavez, they, along with the Chamber of Commerce, all these forces called a general strike. Now, there were thousands of people in the street, but it's become a very chaotic situation. If you woke up every morning in Venezuela and saw every newspaper, the TV stations, radio, the main radio stations, all of them just hammering away against Chavez every day and really lying. I mean, it was amazing what I saw, the headlines there. So this strike takes place, and part of the military goes to the presidential palace. There's evidence that sharpshooters fired on the crowd to set about this chaos. And then the coup took place in which the military came in, arrested Chavez, claimed he had resigned, when in fact it turned out a day later he said he had not resigned. And the very next day, I mean, this is unique in Latin American history, after a coup, the masses came out, the poorest neighborhoods came out, people who have felt that Chavez represented them, they came out in mass and took over the presidential palace again, threw out the interim coup leader of a day, Carmona, and reinstalled Chavez after about a 10-hour standoff in which the people would not leave the presidential palace until they saw Chavez brought back. And the military, which overthrew Chavez in the first place, as you can imagine, and the U.S. government were extremely disconcerted.
Right. Right. And, there's a lot to be said about that, too. But so in the polls, we hear, if you read the newspapers, you hear that Hugo Chavez is no longer popular. You hear that his approval ratings have dropped to something like 30%. But then when he's ousted, what you say happened, you know, poor people came out and reinstalled him to power.
Yeah, and there was no counter-movement to keep him out. Polls, anybody can find a poll that will support their position. I do think that people are very unhappy about the situation. If there was 80% poor people when he came into office, there's even more. The country is in a worse crisis than before, partly because of September 11, but also the oil industry executives and the unions have worked together to disrupt the oil, to disrupt production, to slow it down, and reduce the amount of income coming into the country. It's very similar to the coup in Chile in 1973, when after the copper was nationalized and taken over from AT&T and Anaconda and the U.S. oil copper companies, that they all worked together to boycott and blockade copper from Chile to going out into the world market. And then, you know, the economy went to a downspin and the middle class came out in rebellion. In Venezuela, I believe that what's needed in Venezuela is a furthering of the process that Chavez has brought about. He's talking about land reform, about giving land to the poor peasants. that would enable people to be able to eat for the first time well and to provide food for the country instead of for export. They're talking about really, even though the industry of oil is nationalized, they're talking about perhaps giving up some of the debts that they owe to the banks. They've already paid the interest and the principal several times over. And I think what Chavez is trying to do in Venezuela is perhaps what has happened in Cuba, in which a revolution took place. They call it in Venezuela the Bolivarian Revolution, Bolivar being the great liberator in Latin America in 1821. But the problem is that Venezuela is still controlled by the wealthy oligarchy. Even though Chavez is a progressive president, he's not able to institute fully the reforms he wants to because he doesn't hold power, he only holds office. And the question is, will the people, the unemployed, the employed who are not unionized, and the unionized workers continue to support him and really fight those who are keeping progress from happening, both in partly within the military, the right wing, the media, the oligarchs, and the U.S. government? And that's the question. Things are a bit confusing there. But I think people were clear when they brought him back into power. As I said, you know, that was a huge reversal that took place.
Right. When you're talking to your members in California, and if you recommend action for them, what would you recommend that they do about what's happening in Venezuela?
Well, I talked to my co-workers in general about other issues as well, that they need to concern themselves more about international affairs. You know, on the one hand, many of them sometimes get whipped up about war hysteria and were supporting Bush in the beginning. But then on the other hand, you'll hear them in the same, you know, sitting down at the coffee table talking about Social Security and how it's getting ripped off. And then you have to explain, you guys, you know, they're ripping off Social Security to build more cruise missiles and pay off the military debt. So workers, and not just my coworkers, I tell other people too, that workers, whether union or not, have to understand the link between the domestic issues, the lack of health care plan. I mean, health care should be free in this country. We have it within our means in the richest country in the world. All of this could be ours if we had, if we exercised our power, and first by understanding the forces at hand and understanding the link between domestic issues and foreign, that workers in Venezuela are the same as us, and they have the same needs.
All right, Gloria, was there anything else that you wanted to say today?
No, I just believe that right now we face a very difficult time in the labor movement. I know I just became president of my union in January. I've been a worker at the Chronicle for 20 years. And I see, as president, which I've known before, but it's getting harder and harder for people to join a union. And I think that we're going to have to get more involved as workers in the kind of issues taking place against the war, for example. I know that I'll be marching on Saturday in San Francisco, April 20th. Against the Bush policies of war, racism, union busting, and poverty.
Right. Okay, Gloria, well, thank you very much for your time, and good luck to you as president of your local.
Thank you, Peter.